Hi, everyone. Welcome to Waste 360's Nothing Wasted podcast. On every episode, we invite the most interesting people in waste, recycling, and organics to sit down with us and chat candidly about their thoughts, their work, this unique industry, and so much more. So thanks for listening and enjoy this episode. Hi, everyone. This is Liz Bothwell from Waste 360 and WET with Stephanie Bolliard, Senior Engineer to the Assistant Secretary at North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality. She also happens to be one of our brilliant 40 Under 40 winners. Hi, Stephanie. Welcome and thanks for being on the show.
Hey, Liz. Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad we are finally chatting as we've been following your journey. And you've really grown up in this waste recycling and organics industry. So please tell me more about your interesting journey.
Thanks. One thing I always like to start out with is being in the solid waste industry, I would say it was not my plan A and likely far from my plan B. But I really like to bring this up to take an opportunity whenever I talk to college students or emerging professionals in our field to, you know, look back at opportunities and remind them that our careers aren't linear. They're far from it. And to try to embrace the skills and experiences that you might gain along the way. And I say that because when I started undergrad, I was going to be a chemical engineer, and that didn't happen. It wasn't really the right fit for me at the time. And thankfully, that brought me to UCF in environmental engineering. When I had first started grad school, I was working for the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, as well as getting involved in various professional organizations. And one of the things that I think has really helped me get to where I am today is the fact that I had opportunities that I was able to take advantage of and leverage to better understand aspects of my graduate program, my professional career, at the time, my future professional career, as well as gaining valuable connections to not only the solid waste industry, but other industries, because as you know, there's a lot of clear intersections between the solid waste industries and other industries. And it really just helped me develop a love for the field. And thankfully, at UCF, I had the opportunity to meet Debbie Reinhart, take on an EREF research project for my master's, and go to GWMS when it was in San Antonio and meet some really great professionals that really helped me get excited about wanting to work to become an EREF scholar and just become more part of the industry.
I love the origin story includes the Global Waste Management Symposium. That's awesome. And so, I mean, to your point, you've been spending a lot of time digging into the research and data behind the industry, and now in your new role, tell me what you're paying attention to now.
Well, in my new role, I'm working directly with this assistant secretary in the secretary's office and other division directors to really support and guide various activities aligned with DEQ's mission and also implement our strategic plan. I'll also be serving as a lead engineer supporting DEQ's leadership. And one thing important there is in my previous roles, one of the things I really enjoyed was being that subject matter expert or the individual that could delve into the research and the data to really understand where the industry might be at in an issue or challenge, what research is out there, and how to connect the two to address any emerging needs like PFAS. I'm sure you're well aware that that has been something that the industry has been tackling for the last couple of years. Thankfully, through research, through peer-reviewed articles, through subject matter experts to really understand how they can get ahead of potential regulations on the topic and how to be able to protect human health and the environment in that example. And one thing that I'm excited about is in my position, I will be working directly with and on in the more forward-thinking leaders in our organization and emerging topics that are very important to society, not only within North Carolina, but broadly across the U.S.
Oh, that's good to hear. But I mean, and speaking of PFAS and other emerging contaminants, I feel like it's on all of our minds, where even a few years ago, it was kind of new phenomenon, right? We were all trying to understand, and also from an industry perspective, understand what the impact is. Would you mind giving an overview of kind of what the industry should be concerned about relative to these chemicals?
Yeah, I think that's a good point about, you know, where we were a few years ago and where we are now. Because I would say when I started my master's research in 2010, I was working on emerging contaminant, and that was nanoparticles. And that didn't exactly gain a lot of attention over the years at that time. And then I started working on dissolved organic nitrogen, UV impacts. Those are all emerging contaminants. But I think PFAS in my career has been the first emerging contaminant that I've seen not only the regulatory community, the industry, but also the community paying attention to, because in some instances it's directly impacted their lives in one way or the other. And what's also interesting is PFAS is not something that just came about a couple of years ago. It has been something that has been ingrained in our society since the late 1930s. And it's in carpet, it's in our nonstick pans, it's in a lot of the conveniences that we've grown to enjoy without really making the connection between the chemistry and the science behind why we have those conveniences. The solid waste industry is in a unique position because they are a sector that manages the waste that contain PFAS. And it's not something that you can just stop doing. You can't stop collecting waste, because as we know, that's not the whole reason why we have an integrated solid waste management system, is for human health and the environment. And one thing I would say about PFAS is, and I really appreciate this about the industry, is they have invested money in research. They have invested time in gaining expertise on understanding what options are for leachate treatment, waste acceptance criteria, really trying to stay ahead of emerging regulations to be prepared.
That is good. And I mean, it is happening, and that's fantastic. And I feel like the industry is ready for that kind of 2.0 version of how to handle it. So I'm excited that you will be covering that at Waste Expo in May. So looking forward to that too.
That workshop I'm really excited about, because over the last couple of years, I've watched what it took internally for EREF, for example, to get up to speed to be a resource at that time for the industry, and what various industry are having to do to identify someone who spends their time get up to speed on emerging topics like this while still doing their day-to-day job, that I'm sure they're already stretched thin in that aspect. And I noticed that a lot of times I felt like if I was an attendee attending some of these presentations that were great resources, it gave them a really good understanding and tools to begin to understand how they can implement treatment technologies into their day-to-day. But I recognize that there could still be further discussions. And there was an opportunity to develop a workshop where we bring more people to the table. We briefly introduce the technical topic, but really we set the stage to talk to individuals that have spent a lot of time on this challenge and getting up to speed, and things they've considered when they evaluated various leachate technologies or how the CERCLA designation might impact. And one of the things that I really look to is the public sector. Do they have the resources? Do they have the staff and the time to be able to delve into that? So I really would like to have this workshop and other opportunities to be an educational outreach opportunity in this area.
Oh, that makes sense. And with your background, you'll be well suited for that, for sure. And speaking of, you have this, and I know I've said this to you before, and you're so humble, you'll probably get embarrassed, but you have this unique skill set of having a scientific and technical background, yet you have this innate ability to translate that messaging into easy to understand commentary for people. And that's not easy to do. How do you do that?
I try to figure that out probably almost every day. And I have not really come to a clear, here's how you can do this. I think for me, as a student, I was never one that always easily understood topics. Sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. I really had to spend a lot of time learning things that didn't come easily. And when I was in grad school and I taught solid waste management at the college level, when I approached my lectures and I approached homeworks and such, I always thought back to myself as a student, and I would almost look at a problem from beginning to end and think, where are some of the areas that a student's probably going to get tripped up on? Where do we need to break this down a little more? What are some ways to explain something to meet various learning needs of the students? And I think that's really helped me in writing, because I tried to predict areas where someone maybe needed to learn a little more about it, or maybe I needed to explain something to really make the connection. And so when it comes to writing now, that's something that I think about. But I also notice working at EREF in the industry, when you have executives that have a need for information in one way, and then you have the more technical staff that, will want information one way, and really just understanding how to balance that. And whenever I'm writing something right now for work and I'm ultimately describing what I did, I understand that you can't spend a whole page talking about one thing that you've gathered. What's going to be enough information for them to understand, and but not too much where you're going to lose them in reading a document or reading a piece. And I really want people to be able to be excited about what they read as well.
Well, it definitely comes across. And I mean, it's, the world, even for readers and people who love the written word, we've become a skimming society, and we would never want to dummy it down. And I feel like you've just bridged that perfect gap of getting their attention and then pulling them into sort of that, the longer content and more technical content, which is hard to do. So bravo to you. And you have helped students even now, right? I mean, you're teaching. So can you talk a little bit about that and what that brings you and what you get out of it?
That's true. I still continue to teach, and I still take every opportunity to mentor students or peers. And I think one of the reasons that I do try to focus on the mentoring aspect is I think back to the teachers and the professionals that really have impacted my career and even myself as a person, and has really helped me stay connected to the industry. And I remember a saying of, as a mentor on a PBS show, that, be the person that you wish you had in previous life. And so that's what I try to be. And it really just brings me just personal joy to be able to help people in general and be able to hopefully be that person that can help impact them, but also more importantly, help attract individuals to the solid waste industry. It's a really fun field. Over the last few years leaving graduate school, I've had Debbie Reinhart, Joe Banco, Craig Benson, Paul Segrecia, not limited to those individuals, but have been a great foundation at various aspects of my career that I've been able to leverage their feedback to improve and push myself.
I love that you had those mentors and now you've become one yourself. I think that's awesome. Now, speaking of, you are one of our 40 under 40 winners. What advice do you have for young professionals when they get into the industry?
Love what you do. and put everything that you have into it with a good balance, a good work-life balance. I think a lot of us after the pandemic, including myself, are starting to try to focus more on work-life balance. But one of the things that I've always appreciated is when I'm in a position that allows me to work on something that I truly have passion for, where I see the connection to society or industry, and also finding a unique fit. So one thing that I've done, whether it was in professional organizations, in my job, or just watching the industry and see where my skill set can fit into a unique area and what contribution I could make. That's definitely a motivating factor for me. So I think that's something that I think would be great for young professionals. I think another thing that I would suggest is don't be afraid to take an opportunity. I think one of the biggest turning points early on in my career was going to professional society meetings as a student. And a lot of times, and I love to tell students this, don't ever be afraid to go. Don't think that you don't have something to contribute. If you show up, you volunteer, you have something you need to bring. You might not know what that is in the first meeting, but at the end of the day, I've never been in a professional organization or at a professional meeting where they have not been welcoming to students and volunteers. I would say take those opportunities. Don't ever limit yourself throughout your career.
Oh, I love that advice. It's so true. I feel like we could all use it now too at any stage of our career too.
Yeah, and I recently had talked to a PhD student about a year ago, and I really find that a lot of times people are concerned about, well, I have this background, how can I make a change? Or where does my skill set fit in? And one of the things that I found is, and this is something that Craig Benson recently told me, is instead of focusing on the job, a specific job down the road, focus on developing skills for that next opportunity. Whether it's tomorrow, a year from now, 5 years from now, you'll have the skills to be able to take advantage of that opportunity. And that's something that I've definitely, over the last probably year and a half, have focused more on kind of knowing down the road what I want to do, looking at my unique skill set and where it could fit in. And so now, you know, I could say I want to be in senior leadership one day, hopefully at the executive level, and I'm working towards that now. I would say a few years ago, I probably would never have said that out loud, especially in a podcast recording, but it took me to look at my skill set. For example, when I said solid waste industry or, you know, being in the regulatory community was not necessarily a plan A, you know, I prepared to become a professor. But when the EREF opportunity came up and I started working more with industry, I realized that one thing that my strength was the networking aspects, being able to talk to academics, understand that community, but also begin to understand and learn the industry, and then figure out how you can better connect the two together, even if it was down from just a fundamental communication aspect. So don't ever look at an opportunity that was not necessarily what you're preparing for, and instead look at your skills and where you might best fit in.
Absolutely. And you might surprise yourself, right?
Yeah. And that's, I would say for me, I would say over the last probably 5 years or 6 years, that was something where transitioning from graduate school to my professional career, really flipping and looking at experience and skill set as opposed to going after a specific job. And then over the last year and a half, I really began to be more proactive about what I want to do, learning that you don't necessarily define yourself in a role. I switched to a completely different field and was still able to excel in various aspects on the communication side, on the bridging the industry and academic aspects, working to better understand how to implement research. That's something that is applicable across multiple industries. And I think that was the perfect opportunity for me to realize that the only limitation to success is really yourself and how to not limit.
Fabulous advice. We all need to listen to it, I think.
Exactly.
And then I know sustainability is obviously on everyone's mind. It's a different definition for everyone. But with your unique background, I know sustainability, we talk about it having to be quantifiable in some way, and the changes that we make really to advance goals and to help the next generation and our planet need to be accountable, and we need to quantify in some way. Is there anything you're watching around that, sort of with that quantifiable side in mind, to kind of move sustainability forward, whether it's professionally or personally?
That's a good question. I think one of the areas that I've been watching probably a little more closely that relates to sustainability is the push for science-based targets, specifically related to greenhouse gas emissions. And I was very impressed that when I looked at the solid waste industry to see two of the private companies taking pledges to reduce greenhouse gas emissions globally to contribute to reducing greenhouse gas emissions, climate change. Climate change is definitely a touchy subject. I know that some people believe in it and some people that don't. One of the things that I like to take is the science-based approach is, you know, what does the science say? What does the science show? And, you know, what we can do as an industry and as a society to contribute to reducing those emissions. I think one thing that I've seen over the last couple of years is I've been impressed with how much sustainability has gotten into companies at the higher level, at the executive level, and paying more attention and seeing the benefits of sustainability. But that's also driven by society paying more attention to sustainability. I would say it's definitely challenging from a quantification aspect for sustainability because there's direct and indirect impacts. And sometimes if we were to measure the quality of life or what the value of carbon reductions are, a lot of times that can be very subjective and can be hard to quantify. So I think there's definitely going to be a need for a quantitative approach as well as a qualitative approach within sustainability.
Definitely. Well, keep us posted. And I know you just did a great infographic on climate change and the history of it. Can you do a quick overview of what you found in your research?
Yeah. Well, when I first wanted to write something in this area, I really wanted to touch on these science-based targets and really help the industry understand what that means, what really is the driver towards that program and that interest. And when I started to do my research to start writing, I realized that similar to PFAS, it wasn't a concept that we just discovered last year. And so I started to delve into really when the first time that the scientific community had developed or identified a fundamental concept that would later affect or be connected to what we're discussing today about climate change. And it was really interesting to see just the discovery of CO2, discovery of technology to measure CO2, and just the really relatively simplistic when we compare to some of the sophisticated modeling and analytical techniques and experiments that are done today that pointed to an increase in atmospheric CO2 can cause an increase in temperature. And I think one of the biggest things that is really unknown is, you know, what are those implications? How quickly is that going to occur? And that we've been monitoring our CO2 levels for decades. But it wasn't till probably the last 10 to 20 years that we really saw more attention being paid to climate change and pointing to the need to start being proactive about reducing emissions to and make sure we don't get to the point where it'll be more challenging to come back from in terms of climate effects.
I bet. So tell me, what's next in your new role?
Continuing to get up to speed on PFAS, delve a little more into where we might find PFAS, maybe from a manufacturing and industrial level. And I think for me, the biggest area's growth is understanding how we take scientific information and make, you know, science data-driven decisions. In my role, I'll just be the technical resource. I won't be the one making those decisions, just providing information to those that will. But it'll be interesting to see how in the environmental field we do bridge the science, the policy, and also societal implications. One thing that I've been noticing here, and it was something that I've always known, and anyone knows, is that the environmental organizations, state regulatory agencies, they're here to protect society. And so asking those questions and making the considerations of how it might impact a community when something is being permitted and such. So it'll be interesting to kind of pivot from outreach and education to the industry, as well as outreach and education to the industry, but also society in my role.
Oh, that will be interesting. And a strength of yours, right along the communication span. So once you start those programs, I'd love to see kind of what you're implementing.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you. You have a great day, and we will keep in touch.
Thank you. You too.